20. Martin materialized, standing straight and tall with a triumphant smile on his face, which faded quickly when he dropped 2 feet and landed in several inches of wet concrete. He bent at the knees and hunched over, swinging his free arm wildly to keep his balance while leaning heavily on his staff. He managed to keep from falling down into the gray mush, but his shoes and the hem of his already tattered robe were covered. Martin swiveled his head, taking in his surroundings. At first he thought he had accidentally transported somewhere he'd never been, but soon he realized that this was the main room of Gary's living space at Skull Gullet Cave. It only looked different because all of the furniture had been removed, the entire kitchen area had been demolished, and the floor was awash in a uniform layer of wet concrete. In the center of the living room, directly under the spot Martin had teleported into, was some sort of broad, shallow pit that had been sectioned off with wooden forms, with a separate pool of wet concrete at the bottom of the lower section. Martin pulled out 1 foot, looked at his ruined shoe, and shouted, "Gary!" The door that led to the antechamber opened. Gary leaned through the doorframe without stepping into the room. Behind Gary, Martin saw all of Gary's furniture arranged awkwardly around the stone pedestal. An episode of This Old House was playing soundlessly on the TV, green letters spelling mute superimposed over the top left corner. "Hey, Martin, how's it going?" Martin stomped his foot down, deliberately splashing it in the wet concrete. "You cleared the entire room, filled it with concrete, and lowered part of it just to get us to fall in?" Gary glanced around the empty room. "Us? I only see one of you." "The rest are coming!" "Excellent," Gary said, and leaned against the doorframe, waiting for the show to begin. Only a few seconds later, Gwen materialized in midair, where the floor level had been before, holding her wand in one hand and a bundle of silver fabric in the other. She fell 2 feet, landing with a splash in the concrete. Martin rushed forward to hold her up, but stopped when it became obvious that she didn't need his help. Gwen looked down at her feet, then up at Martin with a smile on her face. "He got us this time."
"Looks like it," Martin said.
Gwen turned to Gary and said,
"Well done."
Then turned back to Martin and said,
"Hi."
"Hi."
Gwen smiled, and Martin smiled back, uneasily.
When Gwen seemed happy to see him, it made Martin happy. When she seemed unhappy to see him, it made him unhappy. When she went from looking unhappy to see him to looking happy to see him with no explanation for the change, it made him profoundly uncomfortable.
Gwen held the bundle of silver fabric forward.
"I made this for you. It's a new robe."
Martin took it.
"Thanks! That's great! I'll put it on later, when I'm not standing in wet concrete."
Tyler appeared, far enough to the side that one of his feet was over the pit. His left foot touched down on the upper level while the right half of his body kept falling, finally stopping when his right foot hit the bottom of the pit. Normally, he'd have hopped to the side to regain his balance, but the wet concrete prevented this. Instead, he fell over sideways, twisting on the way down and landing flat on his back, as if he intended to make a concrete angel. He seemed poised to unleash a torrent of profanities, but Gwen smiled down at him and greeted him with a cheerful,
"Hi, Tyler. Looks like Gary saw us coming this time."
She extended a hand to help him up.
"Yeah," Tyler said, taking her hand. "Looks like it, I guess. Gwen, good to see you. You seem good."
"Yeah."
As he came to his feet, Tyler looked at Martin, who held up his new robe, still folded, for Tyler to see.
"She made me a new robe."
"Oh, nice. So you two have made up?"
Martin smiled.
"I guess,"
Gwen said.
"We'll talk about it."
Martin's smile dimmed. Roy and Jeff appeared at the same moment. Jeff materialized in the empty space over the sunken area and immediately fell in. Roy appeared on the higher portion of the floor and sunk into the concrete slowly, while cursing. Martin said,
"I hope you're satisfied, Gary."
"I am. I really, really am. It makes me wish I'd done this on purpose.
I'm just having the floors redone. That hole you're all wallowing in is going to be my new conversation pit."
Gary shouted,
"Foreman!"
Banging, creaking, and sounds of human exertion became audible as one of the doors down at the end of the hall opened. Hubert leaned out of the door, wearing a hard hat and waders with his tuxedo coat.
"Beastmaster!"
I'm afraid my idiot friends have messed up the floors in here. You and the boys will have to come refloat it in the conversation pit.
I see what you mean, Master. We're on the way!
The wizards all levitated into the air and gravitated to the outer edge of the room as 13 dirty, undernourished young men in hard hats, rubber boots, and matching black t-shirts printed with an illustration of a tuxedo jacket, white shirt, and bow tie flooded out of the hallway and into the main room, their feet caked with wet concrete. They used flat boards and planks of wood to smooth out the tortured concrete while Gary stood in the doorway and shouted directions.
That's it! Be careful, apprentices! The concrete flows like the currents of magic. It obeys its own laws, but with skill and patience you can guide it into the form you wish.
Oh, Lord, Tyler moaned. He's doing a Karate Kid.
What's a Karate Kid?
Hubert asked as he dragged a straight plank across the surface of the concrete. Gary said,
It's an ancient and legendary teaching technique invented by a great magician called Miyagi.
Did he teach you, Master?
In a way, he taught us all, Hubert. How's progress on the seductorium?
Work on your bedroom is going well, Master. We've completed a mirror-lined posing platform. We've moved on to pouring the floor.
Very good. Apprentices, remember, as you swing your hammers, the motion is quite similar to the motion one uses when wielding a wand. So watch your form and try not to bend the nails. It's wasteful and looks amateurish. And I'd better not catch anyone writing their names in the floor in there.
Jeff muttered, Concrete floors in the bedroom? Doesn't sound very seductive. Gwen shook her head. None of it does.
The finished floors won't be concrete, Gary explained. They're just laying down a nice flat slab. Later, they'll install the shag carpet.
Tyler absent-mindedly stroked his chin.
I've always wondered, do they call it shag carpet because of how it looks, or because of what the owner hopes to do on it?
Gary smiled.
Can it be both?
It can, Gwen said, sadly. The apprentices worked their way backward down the hall, leaving a trail of perfectly flat concrete in their wake, until they finally disappeared back into the rooms in which they'd been working before. The wizards floated through the door to Gary's ceremonial antechamber and lowered themselves to the floor. Tyler rounded on Gary.
You put them to work remodeling your house?
Yeah, Gary said. They wanted to do something, so I gave them something to do.
They're expecting you to teach them magic.
I'll let them all expend some energy, then I'll give them some sort of test to see if they have the gift or something. They'll all fail, and I'll send them back out into the world.
When?
When they finish the remodel. And the yard work I'm planning.
Jeff asked, There isn't a door to the outside from your bedroom, is there?
No.
Then how are your apprentices going to get out without ruining the concrete themselves? Gary said,
I'll just levitate them out. It'll be a valuable lesson for them in the need to plan ahead.
You just came up with that now, didn't you?
Roy asked.
Yes, which is a valuable lesson in the importance of being able to improvise.
But why live in a home that was banged together by a bunch of amateurs when you can just make anything you want with magic?
The things we make with magic are just copies of things that were probably mass-produced to begin with. Sure, things that were made by hand have flaws, but they also have character. They have soul.
These aren't craftsmen, Roy said.
They're untrained medieval peasants. The stuff they make will be nothing but flaws.
So they'll have that much more soul.
Gwen stared at Gary in obvious disbelief.
Wait a second. Since when do you care about this kind of thing?
Since always, Gary said. There's more to me than heavy metal and practical jokes.
Yeah, Tyler said. There's chasing women.
Unsuccessfully, Martin added.
And a love of handcrafted woodworking. You might have known if any of you had ever bothered to ask, or to even look around when you visit and think about what you see. Why did you think I had a book by George Nakashima on my shelf?
Gwen said I never noticed, because the bookcase was made of cinder blocks and plywood. Martin said, okay, we've gotten off track here. We can discuss Gary's remodel later, when it's done and looks like crap. I called you all here because an apology is in order.
Gwen crossed her arms. Yes?
Yes, Martin said.
They all stood in silence for a moment.
Gwen said, we're waiting.
So am I, because you're the ones who owe me the apology. I told you that Philip was being attacked and you didn't believe me. You all acted like I was crazy. Well, I ask you, who's crazy now?
Martin pulled out and flipped open the small silver box in which he carried his smartphone. He jabbed at the screen a few times, then pointed his staff at the far side of the stone ceremonial chamber. The future version of Philip appeared, standing with slumped shoulders, his staff barely hanging from his fingers. Martin turned back to the group.
See?
Tyler said,
it's Philip. Hi, Philip.
Future Philip remained motionless, except for his right hand, which he slowly waved.
Martin said, no, it isn't Philip. I mean, well, obviously it is Philip, but it isn't really, not our Philip. This is Philip from the future. Look how beat down and wrung out he looks. Our Philip would never leave the house looking that pitiful.
Future Philip glared at Martin.
I don't know, Roy said. Maybe that's just from listening to your blather.
Martin said, I caught him red-handed. If I didn't have him trapped, he'd escape right now. Show them how you're trapped.
Future Philip breathed out, deflating noticeably, then pressed his free hand against the invisible wall of his prison. He asked Martin if that was good enough, but no sound came out of his mouth.
Cool!
Gary gasped.
Like a mime!
Martin said, right? I'm also working on a defensive weapon that forces people to walk into a heavy wind.
Gwen stared at Martin.
You've tried to convince us that you're not crazy by imprisoning your best friend.
I can prove that this isn't our Philip. He stole Philip's Fiero and buried it under a haystack out behind Philip's office.
Is that really proof?
Gary asked. Tyler mulled it over.
Well, I think we'd all agree that no sane man would steal a Fiero.
Future Philip stopped glaring at Martin and started glaring at Tyler.
The real question, Tyler continued, is if Philip's Fiero is under this haystack, did Philip do it? There's no reason to believe you didn't do it yourself, Martin. You seem intent on tormenting Philip.
I'm the one trying to help Philip!
Tyler pointed at the captive Future Philip, who threw up his hands as if to say,
I know, right?
Martin said,
he's the one messing with Philip, and he's the one who took the Fiero. Go look. If you go back in time to 6 o'clock this morning, you can watch him do it.
Roy and Jeff disappeared, were gone for a little less than 5 seconds, then reappeared.
Martin's telling the truth, Jeff said. We watched this Philip steal the Fiero, drive it out, and bury it in hay.
All of the wizards turned and looked at Future Philip.
Gwen asked, okay, what do you have to say for yourself?
Future Philip shrugged and leaned back on the wall of his invisible prison, reminding them that he couldn't speak if he wanted to. Martin touched the end of his staff to the force field surrounding Future Philip and said,
unmute.
Future Philip said,
I expect you want me to thank you.
We just want an explanation, Gwen said.
Future Philip allowed himself to slide down the wall until he sagged in a seated position, like a wilted potted plant that hadn't received enough water.
It pains me to no end to say this, but Martin is right. Everything he's told you is more or less accurate. But what he's left out is that I've been trying, despite Martin's interference, to prevent a terrible catastrophe.
What?
Jeff asked.
Future Philip said,
I can't tell you.
If you tell us, we can help.
No, you can't.
Martin said,
so think about it. He says he's here to prevent a tragedy, but he won't tell us what it is and won't allow us to help. He seems to think it's something only he can fix. And for the life of me, I can't imagine what that would be or why he wouldn't tell us. Logically, I think either he's trying to prevent something that we wouldn't consider a tragedy, or the thing he has to do to prevent this mysterious tragedy is something we wouldn't approve of.
Like what?
Gary asked.
I don't know. And the Philip of tomorrow, today, here, won't tell us, will he?
Future Philip shook his head.
Martin said,
it was a waste giving you back the ability to speak.